From WTIP News, this is the North Shore Weekend News Roundup. I'm Jay Anderson, and here are some of the stories we've been following this week. Wildlife managers closed the wolf season in northeastern Minnesota at the end of shooting hours Friday. Hunters and trappers had registered 30 wolves when the Department of Natural Resources decided on Thursday to close the northeast zone. DNR large carnivore specialist Dan Stark said hunters and trappers have killed an average of 5 or 6 wolves per day in the northeast since the late season began last Saturday, so he expected they would reach the zone's target of 35 by Friday. The late season continues in the northwest and east central zones. Hunters and trappers had registered 22 wolves in the northwest and none in the east central as of Thursday afternoon, well short of the targets of 82 and 9, respectively. Hunters took 124 wolves in the early season, which ended the 15th of November. The Arctic adventurer from Grand Marais will take his lifetime of cold weather savvy back to Alaska's Mount McKinley one more time this winter. Lonnie Dupree will make his fourth attempt to become the first person to climb the 20,237-foot peak solo in January. He tried without success to reach the summit in 2011, 12, and 13. Each time he was thwarted by weather conditions that prevented him from reaching the peak of North America's highest mountain before his supplies ran out. According to the Duluth News Tribune, Dupree, who is 53, will fly to Talkeetna, Alaska on the 10th of December to make final preparations for his climb. From December 15th on, he will be on standby for weather clear enough to allow him to be flown to base camp at 7,200 feet, where expeditions on McKinley typically start. The mountain is unforgiving in winter. Only a team of 2 Russians has reached McKinley's summit in January of 1998. In total, 16 climbers from 9 expeditions have reached the summit during the winter after January. 6 climbers died on those expeditions. Dupree's resume includes numerous Arctic expeditions, including 2 ski treks to the North Pole and a circumnavigation of Greenland by dog sled and kayak. He reached the summit of McKinley, also known as Denali, in the summer of 2009 on an unguided climb with 3 others. He'll carry or tow 170 pounds of gear and food on his attempt this winter, pulling a sled and carrying the rest in a backpack. He'll follow customary mountain climbing procedure, climbing high to ferry gear up and returning to lower elevations to sleep rather than making a dash to higher elevations. Dupree also will start his climb earlier this winter than he has in past years, hoping to take advantage of good weather opportunities. Minnesota's taconite workers face higher risks from a rare form of lung cancer called mesothelioma the longer they've worked in the industry or if they've had above-average exposures to certain kinds of dust. That's the final report from a 6-year University of Minnesota study that assessed the risks to taconite workers from tiny needle-like fibers called elongate mineral particles, or EMPs. But the report stopped short of finding a precise source of the problem. Early results from the study were released in April of 2013 and found a definitive correlation between working in taconite mines and processing plants and mesothelioma, an always fatal lung disease previously associated only with commercial asbestos. But when researchers went deeper into the data, they couldn't answer the question of where the microscopic mineral fibers that caused the mesothelioma were coming from. Either commercial asbestos, such as insulation, or from even smaller fibers that occur naturally in the taconite-bearing rock of the Eastern Iron Range. The result leaves unanswered whether or not the microscopic fibers found in taconite rock actually cause lung disease. Because taconite workers were exposed to both long-fiber asbestos and the short fibers in taconite, there's no way to distinguish the causal relationship to disease. Mesothelioma has a long latency period and often doesn't show up for 40 years after the initial exposure. Only recently has formal asbestos been removed from the workplace for health reasons. If the unusually high level of lung disease continues, researchers say they may eventually conclude that the cause comes from the taconite fibers. Dave and Amy Freeman paddled most of the way, sailed some, portaged a lot, and even walked along highways pushing their canoe on a 2-wheeled cart. According to the Duluth News Tribune, the Northland couple completed their trip from Ely to the nation's capital Tuesday, paddling up the Potomac River and landing at the Washington Canoe Club. Their 100-day, 2,000-mile trek started in the BWCAW on the 24th of August and moved across the Great Lakes through Lake Champlain and down multiple rivers and canals along the East Coast. The trip was aimed at drawing attention and opposition to proposed copper mine projects in the BWCAW watershed. The couple, who summer in Lutzen and spend their winters in Ely, arrived to the welcome of about 40 Minnesotans who had flown to Washington to greet them, many of whom paddled out onto the river in pouring rain and temperatures just above freezing. The Freemans will meet with members of Congress, federal agency officials, and youth groups this week. Dave said, "Our goal all along has been to draw attention to what a special place the Boundary Waters is and tell people why this new kind of mining in a sulfide ore body is not appropriate for such a special place." The goal was to deliver a canoe full of petitions to Washington against copper mining in the region. The effort is aimed most specifically at the proposed Twin Metals copper mine project east of Ely along the Kowishewe River. Supporters say the project, which has not yet entered any environmental review, would create hundreds of jobs and be an economic boon for the region. Critics say the chance for acidic mining pollution in the pristine area is not worth the economic benefits. I want to talk about the pool.
This week's demolition.
Yes.
The old municipal pool is in its final stages of existence. The excavators have been working on it since Monday. Yeah. It's sort of, this is how it sounds out front of my office right now. Oh, this is good. It's not quite loud enough, but there's a lot of crashing. Some beeping, perhaps?
Yes, there was some beeping, yes. But
soon, I think the jackhammers will be hammering away at the foundation.
Oh, that'll be fun.
And you'll probably hear that up here.
You'll hear that all over.
Yeah, there's quite a commercial demolition going on right now at the municipal pool. The crew from Edwin Thorson's is hard at work, and they expect to wrap things up by the 19th. But the building's coming down currently, and it's quite impressive for all the big machine lovers out there. And
yeah, you got a lot of people standing around, the construction engineers. Oh, yeah, good, six-year-olds.
It's a sight to behold. There's a lot of nostalgia. Of course, there's, you know, folks coming down, taking one last look. And so everybody's got to be careful and keep their distance, stay off the job site.
Yes, it's hard when your eyes are full of tears.
Yeah, it is. It's a bittersweet time.
Okay.
But it's been shared. It's on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. It's been a popular page. There's actual video footage of an excavator swimming in the pool. And I think it's going to go viral.
Dave Tursky. There he goes, crunching through the debris of the park. And he is the manager of Grand Marais Recreation Park. You've been listening to the North Shore Weekend News Wrap-Up. To hear more from the WTIP News team and to check out the full versions of our stories, visit us at WTIP.org. For North Shore Community Radio, I'm Jay Anderson, wishing you a great weekend.